People look at things differently, don't they? A man from Great Britain, a Frenchman, you'll appreciate this, Jeff, and a Russian were all staring at a painting of Adam and Eve frolicking through the Garden of Eden. And the guy from Great Britain said, look at their calm reserve and their peace. They're obviously British. And the Frenchman said, well, they're naked and it's beautiful, so clearly they are French. And the Russian said, no clothes, no shelter. They have one apple to eat, and they're being told it's paradise. Clearly, they're Russian. Everybody looks at things differently. Now, during the 60s, I, again, would have been a baby, so I wouldn't have known this song, but some of you probably would have. Anybody remember the Kingston Trio? Raise your hands if you remember the Kingston Trio. They did a song, and it was still played after I started listening to music, and here were the lyrics. They're rioting in Africa. They're starving in Spain. There's hurricanes in Florida. Texas needs rain. Whole world is festering with unhappy souls. The French hate the Germans. Germans hate the Poles. Italians hate the Yugoslavs. South Africans hate the Dutch. And me, well, I don't like anybody very much. But we can be grateful. We can be proud. For man is endowed with a mushroom-shaped cloud. And we can be certain that some happy day, someone will set it off and we'll all be blown away. Aren't you glad you come to church to be encouraged this morning? What a great song. It conveys a truth that we all know to be fully true, and that is this. The world is a mess. And there's a second follow-up to that truth. Not only is the world a mess, but God has called us to let him work through us to help us clean up the mess. Now, usually what's being said, the importance of what's being said is directly related to the person who is saying what's being said. In other words, you tie the words to the person who's delivering the words, and the importance of those words is in direct proportion to the one saying it. Johnny was 10 years old, came home from school, and he got some chocolate chip ice cream out of the freezer, which is what I would get out. I don't eat a lot of ice cream. If I did, chocolate chip. And he's dipping it, and his mom comes in and says, put it up, too close to supper. Said, you can have some after supper. Oh, come on, Mom. No. You can have some after supper, go out and play. Well, I don't have anybody to play with. She said, well, stay here in the house. Depending on what you want to play, I'll play with you. He said, okay, let's pretend that we're husband and wife. I'm dad and you're you. Is that okay? She said, okay, and she kind of laughed. She said, what do I do first? He kind of lowered his voice. He said, well, the bathroom upstairs needs clean, so get to it, woman. Well, she took the cleaning supplies, and she went upstairs to the bathroom. She thought, well, it needs cleaning anyway. Might as well play along. While she's up there, Johnny puts on his dad's fishing vest and his Bass Pro Shop hat, walks upstairs to the bathroom where his mom had been cleaning, and she's still playing along, and she says, now what do I do, honey? And in a deep voice, Johnny said, you get downstairs, and you get that boy some ice cream. There are those who would teach that the red letter edition of the Bible is the red letters in the Bible indicate the most important things being said in the Bible. I understand that, but it's a little bit short-sighted because Jesus didn't only say the words that are highlighted in red. He helped write the entire Bible. But those are the words that he said when he was here on earth, which fascinates me and draws my attention to them. And I want to look at some of those this morning. Now, in my hermeneutics class at the seminary, which is the interpretation of Scripture, there was a principle that has served me well, the first and last principle, which means look at something that someone says when they first come on the scene, look at their last words, and then obviously the in-between, see how they tie together. First and last principle with Jesus is pretty important. Check it out, Matthew chapter 4. First, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They're casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. That's the first. Now we go to the last, before he defied gravity and ascended back to heaven. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I'm with you always, even to the very end of the age. The first, the last, I can interpret it for you with two words. Go fish. Jesus said when he came, go fish. Jesus said when he left, go fish. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. Leads us to the outline. Number one, to go fish, it starts with following. Jesus said, follow me. How many of you have seen the Princess Bride? I never have, but I'm told all the time how wonderful it is. And guess who loves this movie? You'll never guess who loves this movie. Our own Charlie Scott. This is one of his favorite movies, and his favorite line I want to tell you about. In The Princess Bride, there's a character, and I might not be saying these right, named Vicini. Does that sound right? Nod at me if that sounds right. Vicini. You'll have no idea what I'm talking about. He was a short, balding guy who said a word over and over. Anybody know what the word was he kept saying throughout the movie? That is right, Chase. But he didn't say it normal, did he? He kind of did that Sylvester suffering succotash kind of thing going on. He said, inconceivable. Inconceivable. And he would say it over and over and over. In the movie, Dread Pirate Roberts is climbing a rope to the top of the cliff, and Vicini cuts the rope thinking that he would fall, but he didn't. And Vicini says, inconceivable. Just then, another actor, Indigo Montoya, in the film says this, and this is Charlie's favorite line. You keep on using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. And I think a lot of times we use words and we don't know the original meaning. I have been left behind when it comes to the English language. I cannot understand my kids anymore. I really can't. And it's not just the social media stuff. It's when they're standing there looking me in the eye. I need an interpreter, a young man or woman interpreter to tell me what they're saying. And I come from a long line of social media delinquents. Me and my dad, we're not good at this. I'll never forget the first time he said in front of all the kids, and he was serious at the heart attack, you'll never catch me twitting on Twitter. Well, we got a problem here. The word bad used to mean something wrong, the opposite of good. Doesn't mean that today. It means good. So you hear teenagers say, man, that's bad. And you say, well, I'm sorry. And I say, no, it's good. What did sick used to mean? Physically ill, not feeling well. What does it mean today? Great. Amazing. Oh, did you see that Harley? It was sick. And part of the problem is Facebook. For instance, the word like originally meant to enjoy something or someone. I like that. I enjoy that. Now it means I acknowledge you electronically. The word friend was an actual person. You actually had a relationship with them. There was a mutual affection. Today, a friend is someone you add to a list of contacts. There was a time when the word follow meant you walked behind someone, or you traveled after them, or you subscribed to their belief system. Now, all it means is you get electronic updates. I follow you. That means they may not like you, and they'll never really follow you. They just want to keep track of you. When you change the meaning of words, you rob the word of its impact that it had in the beginning. So Jesus comes to these fishermen, and he says, follow me. He's not talking about Twitter. He means I want you to literally follow me. Because I've learned through the years, and it might sound a little bit skeptical to you, but I'm telling you the truth. More people sign up to be a fan of Jesus than they do to be a follower. Now, this go fishing passage isn't the only place Jesus said, follow me. And the disciples aren't the only ones he said it to. Following and fishing. You signed up for that when you became a Christian. And not everyone wants that job. There are lazy people in every family, and there are lazy people in the church. I've got two cousins who are, they've always been lazy. They remind me of these old boys laying around on Hee Haw. Remember those? Come, spur. Well, I got two cousins, Bobby and Jimmy Wayne. Their last name's Fugate. And Bobby said to Jimmy Wayne one day, he said, did you hear about Earl? They talk real slow, too, like it's hard to talk. You hear about Earl? And Jimmy Wayne said, no. And Bobby said, well, he got a job. And Jimmy Wayne said, oh, my. And Bobby said, yeah, ain't it a sight what some people will do for money? One of the classes I took at seminary that I really enjoyed, I was telling Karen this yesterday, was Gospel Harmonies. You lay out all four gospel writers' accounts of every event. you need a big table, and you see the similarities and the differences. There's only three events that are mentioned in all four Gospels. I'm not going to give that away because that's next Sunday's sermon. But when it comes to this, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men, Matthew describes it as Jesus just saying that to the disciples. But Mark and Luke's account say Jesus said this to the disciples and to the multitudes, meaning follow me and fish is not just for the paid professionals. It's not just for the disciples. It's not just for the pastors and the preachers. It's your job too. And the truth is, you can get in places people won't let me in. People put up their defenses when the preacher comes around. They do. They won't say to me what they'll say to you. I don't get it. Maybe I don't have the tact that you have. Well, let me take that back because I know some of you and I got a lot more tact than some of you do. But maybe I don't have the tact that the rest of you have. A lady in Greendale grabbed me going out to church once. The problem is I don't get any time to think. I have to respond. And she shook my shoulders and she said, "Did you know how many grammatical errors you had in your prayer this morning?" No, but all that could come out was, I wasn't talking to you anyway. Listen, people put up their defenses, their pretenses when the preacher comes. They act strange around preachers. I've never been one to stereotype people, and I don't want it done with me either. Best thing you could ever say to me is, Mark, you don't act like a preacher. Because if I ever give you the impression that I don't struggle with sin and I don't make bad decisions and I don't get selfish on occasion and I don't neglect my responsibility, if I give you the impression that spiritually I'm better, have the decency and the love for me to pull me aside and tell me that I've been a complete idiot and I need to stop pretending. I don't want to pretend. People always pretend when the preacher comes around. You could be in the middle of a dirty joke you shouldn't be telling, and as soon as I walk up, all of a sudden all I can hear about are the Cubs or the weather. Little guy come running in the house not knowing the preacher was there. And he had a dead rat by the tail and he's swinging it around. He said, "Mom, look, caught him behind the bar. I smashed his head with a hammer. I threw rocks at him. I stomped on him. I jumped up and down." And then he looked up and he saw the preacher and he said, I. And then the good Lord called him home. Listen, if we're going to go fish the way Jesus called us, it starts with following. It's my job. It's your job. It's your kid's job. It's our job. And it flows from faithfulness. After Jesus said, "Follow me," he said, "I will make you fishers of men." I learned this a long time ago. I'm not responsible for the catch. I'm just responsible for the cast. What a relief that was. I am not, as a church, we're not responsible for the catch. We're responsible for the cast. It's a sin to know that we have bread and not share it with someone who's hungry. There's no doubt that the Bible calls us all to be faithful in the area of sharing our faith. Think about the people who will be rescued from hell because someone took the risk to share. Every single one of us is here today because somebody, a parent, a friend, a preacher, a spouse, somebody took the time, had the guts to share with you the difference Jesus has made in their life. Now listen, I want you to take this personally. Because every Sunday you go out the door and you smugly think, well, everything he said today applies to somebody I know. This applies to you. I taught a class several years ago about sharing your faith. There's all kinds of different ways to do this. For instance, here's some of the models. There's the let me tell you. That's a good way to do it. Hey, here's what the Lord's done in my life, and I'm just telling you what he's done for me. Let me share my story. Then there's the Logan Fugate approach, which is the listen to me approach, which is we're not going to talk small talk. We're going to get right to it and talk about salvation. Then there's the let's think about it, which is let's study and check the evidence, see what conclusion you come to. And if none of those are comfortable to you, try this. Let me help. What can I do for you? Can I mow your yard? Can I wash your car? Be a servant and build a bridge by showing you care, and then they'll care what you know. Listen, the call of the Lord to share our faith is for all people. Unsaved people are not the enemy. They are victims of the enemy. And I know full well most of you aren't going to sit down with somebody, open the Bible, and say, let's talk about it. I know that. Nor are you supposed to. But just like there are hundreds of lures to fish with, there are hundreds of ways to share what God has done for you. Evie Guthrie does it with kindness. Priscilla does it with helpfulness. Rick does it with music. Bernie does it with faithfulness. Charlie does it with example. Derek does it with love for kids. Karen Phipps does it with tutoring. Dave Armstrong does it with steady leadership. Kurt does it with a thirst for Bible knowledge. Heather does it with a prom dress. Dan does it with connections. Kevin does it with gentleness. Sharon does it by being here even though she doesn't feel well. Jeremy does it with good stewardship. Harold does it with teaching. Todd does it with caring. Crystal does it with a big heart. You have to ask the right question. The question is not, can I go fish? The question is, how am I going to do it today? This commercial will date me. Remember the ring around the collar commercials? You had this housewife. And you're early now, Kate. I understand why. You had this housewife that was in tears because a whiny voice came on after she held up her detergent and said, ring around the collar, ring around the collar, as if the detergent was the problem. And I've always wondered, why don't they ask the right question in that commercial? Do you know what the right question in that commercial is? Why doesn't the lazy bum wash his neck? That's the right question. Let's get closer to the truth. God has called us to be faithful in many areas in our lives, to attendance at church, to giving to the Lord's work, and to sharing our faith. So here's where you get to participate. But you have to say the first thing that comes to your mind. It's a psychology test. I'm going to give you a word. They're all occupations. Give you a word, and you say the first thing that comes to your mind. I won't be able to understand it if you all shout at the same time, but that's how it's going to work anyway. So just shout the first thing that comes to your mind. If you delay a few seconds, it doesn't work. And to be fair, I did it myself. Wrote them down and then wrote the first thing that came to my mind with each one. So you just shout it out, all right? Here we go. A librarian. Okay, good. I said glasses. First thing came to my mind. Here we go. A fighter pilot. Okay. I said cool. First thing came to my mind. A sumo wrestler. Heard a whole lot of fat. I said big diaper. A kindergarten teacher. Y'all are kinder than I was. First word came to my mind was mean, and she was. A used car salesman. In the first service, there was about 100 people, and with one voice, they said, cheat! And we had two used car salesmen who will never come back again. Thank you for that. All right, here's another one. A doctor. I said, yuck. First thing that came to my mind. A lawyer. You all can be mean sometimes. I said Matlock. And an evangelist. Billy. Do you know what the lawyer we have in first service yelled out on evangelist? Pushy. And he's right because I said Logan Fugate. Now, I've used these words with people in other churches, and here's what I've determined. We could see ourselves doing all these other things, even the used car salesman. Now, the sumo wrestler might be a stretch, although I can picture Charlie Scott being a sumo wrestler. I mean, as Bubba Fandango, whatever that is in Japanese, I can picture. Matter of fact, I want you to picture in your head right now. No, don't do that. That's sick. But we could see ourselves doing all these things, but whenever I get to evangelist, not one person in one church has ever thought of themselves, nor would you if it weren't pointed out to you. And the truth is, the Bible teaches every single one of us is to be an evangelist and share what Jesus has done with us with the other people in our lives. You, evangelist, you. It starts with following, it flows from faithfulness, and it ends in finding. Jesus said, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. You and I are here today because someone shared that simple truth. It's amazing how this snowballs. You talk about paying it forward. I think about all the people I've preached to, all the people I've been able to baptize and have a part in life change with all those people, it never would have happened in my life had it not been for somebody in my past. It's a phenomenal thought. 2005, check this out. A young man decided he would take up Jesus' call to go fish, and he joined some mission work in Brazil. He prayed, and this is important, he prayed, "Lord, give me just one person that I can work with and then send out to the masses." While he was there, he met Antonio and Yedna and their three children, Lana, Hallison, and Jose Antonio. The missionary grew fond of Jose Antonio, who was only like 7, 8 years old at the time. Jose Antonio was born with some issue with his voice box. He couldn't talk. I mean, he could talk, but you couldn't understand him. It was a gravelly, robotic sound that came out when he talked. And sad, because the kid loved to sing. Other kids were freaked out even by those sounds that Jose Antonio made. All the way up to when this missionary met him, and he's 8 years old, and the missionary fell in love with Jose Antonio, and he prayed with him every day, and he taught him little church songs, like, I will make you fishers of men. And Jose Antonio would sing, but it never, ever worked. I mean, he just wasn't going to get any better. The missionary kept praying. He made it his goal to never give up on Jose Antonio being able to sing and bless other people. And he kept praying, kept singing. They kept singing. And through the course of time, things changed dramatically. And when he was 12 years old, he could do this. Check it out. That young man now has open doors and sings about the love of Jesus all over the world. He's a megastar. He draws more and more people to the grace of God. That's his theme song, and it would never have happened, never, were it not for a young missionary who accepted the call to go fish. Now, I wrote something down, and then I stared at it, and I thought, that sounds kind of harsh, Mark. But after poring over it many times, I believe I want to say it to you this morning. If you believe that there's a heaven and a hell, and people you know could be going to hell and not making it to heaven, and you think, well, it's not really worth telling them because it might be socially awkward, how much do you have to hate somebody to believe that everlasting life is possible and not tell them that? It was April 15th, 1912, when the unthinkable happened as the unsinkable ship sank to the bottom of the North Atlantic. They took off from Southampton, England, April 10th, with 2,223 passengers. 706 survived. 1,517 met a watery grave. Lists were posted when people were looking for their loved ones, and at the head of the columns were two words. If you're looking for your loved ones, you had two lists to choose from: lost, saved. Those are the lists that exist for eternity. But here's how my mind works. Knowing what you know now, knowing what we know now, if you could go back to Southampton, England on April 10th, 1912, and you stood there at the docks as people are boarding that ship, and you know what you know now, and I think I know you all pretty well, and you know me, I gotta believe every single soul in this church would do everything they could to not let somebody get on that boat. And if you didn't, you'd be some kind of monster to know what you know now and not warn people of what was about to happen. And once you start warning them, don't go, impending doom, you will not survive. They're going to call you names. They're going to call you lunatic. They're going to call you fanatic. They're going to think you're crazy. They're going to reject you and make you feel bad. But you know what? You're right. You're right. And it would be unthinkable for you or me to stand there and not say a word. The description of why Jesus left heaven was given by Jesus himself. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. That was his purpose, and he passed it on to me and to you. Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Church, go fish.